Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Cecile Gowett, Executive Editor of our US edition of Boat International and co-chair of our Boat Design and Innovation Awards, which we'll be getting to in just a bit. Because this week, it's all about big winners. We have the results from the first ever World Cup of Superyachts. 40,000 people voted, which was fantastic. And we'll also be discussing the winners of our Design and Innovation Awards, which were revealed just the other day. Cecile, let's start, because there was one big winner at the Design and Innovation Awards. And who was that and why?
Well, it was Artifact, which may not come as a big surprise. The innovation involved in this 80-meter diesel-electric yacht does not leave anyone indifferent. The glass is amazing. The yacht is super quiet. It can cruise for a short time on batteries alone. It draws power from several energy sources, and the ABB direct current grid can be upgraded in the future. So yeah, it's future-proof. Her exterior is by Gregory C. Marshall, Naval Architect. It's amazing, but it's not to everyone's liking. And that led to some interesting discussion. The judges were very impressed by the luxury of the spaces in the interior by Raymond Langton. An amazing office with infinite views, a Tai Chi room, cabins with privacy and views, an arts and craft room, which you don't find in every yacht. It has a very smart layout, which is great for the crew and the guests, and it keeps the yacht very private. The judges loved how well the design integrates arts pieces and the huge windows.
I love the look of Artifact. She is kind of a Marmite boat. For US listeners, Marmite's a popular breakfast spread that you either love or hate. I spoke to Greg Marshall at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show a few years ago about this boat. And I remember him telling me the great story about how it kind of came to be. It was basically a design exercise, wasn't it? In their studio. And they kind of thought, it's just a great opportunity to stretch our imaginations around yacht design. And lo and behold, an owner comes along, loves it, and then builds that boat. So it's a great backstory.
Yeah, I think they spotted the design on the internet one time, and they called him and say, "Hey, remove it. We're interested." They liked it because the owner told me it looked like an electric boat, and he knew from the get-go he wanted a diesel electric yacht.
And we should declare at this point that you have actually spent some time, some nights on Artifact. So what was that like?
That was absolutely amazing. We were the yacht was at anchor in front of the Gros Piton in St. Lucia. And I mean, it's incredible. You walk up to the window, you don't even know it's there. And it's the whole landscape right in front of you. We took a very slow cruise using just the batteries along the coast. So very quietly moving along. And you could see the birds just swooping all around us. It's just like a Disney movie. It's amazing.
I was horrendously jealous.
Yeah, I can imagine that that was a very special moment.
I mean, that was just one of the all-time invites, wasn't it? Really come down and cruise on this spectacular 80-meter boat off St. Lucia with us. I mean, wow.
Yeah. It was totally worth the quarantine.
Yeah. So that kind of talk about the Artifact brings us to this week's interview, in which you had a chat with Artifact's captain, Aaron Clark. Tell us about Aaron.
Well, so Aaron is a great guy. He started as a captain just when he was 18 years old. He worked a lot on commercial vessels and has been a captain on superyachts for 25 years, but only worked with three different owners on three different yachts. Very interestingly, two of those are engineers. So that's kind of cool. We had a very nice chat. He's now with a boat in the Mediterranean, and he's very knowledgeable about everything. He was involved from the very, very beginning of Artifact. So he's got lots to say. And we didn't discuss this, but he's also a very good saxophone player.
Multi-talented, Aaron Clark.
Definitely.
Well, he's a very happy man, I bet, at the moment, considering the boat he captains has just been now multi-award-winning
That's
Artifact.
Right.
So stick around a little later. You can hear Cecile's interview with Aaron. It's a really, really fascinating insight into that boat and captaining such a complicated but advanced superyacht. But first, in the afterglow of England's massive win against Denmark. Who said soft penalty? I didn't. In the European Championships, let's discuss another knockout competition, the World Cup of Super Yachts. And I'm very pleased to say, after a week of very grueling competition, we have a winner. But let's have a little look at the results thus far, because in last week's episode, we talked through the first round. So let's just really quickly whip through the quarters, semis, and the final. So looking at the table, Cecile, were there any upsets for you or any fancied boats that didn't get through?
You know, the more I thought about it, the least I could make up my mind. I mean, if it's a spur of the moment decision, maybe I'll click one box. But, you know, if I have to think about it, I just can't make up my mind. It's just, they're so amazing, each and every one of them. You know, I think in the semifinal, Eclipse took over Azam and Octopus overcame Pelorus. And I can see the reason. I mean, Azam is super elegant. I mean, it's, 13,000 gross tons, something like that. And still looking like a very elegant yacht. Yeah, and Pelorus is a beauty, 113 meters. Team Haywood, Terry Dizdale, can't do much better than that. But then, yeah, Octopus is a phenomenal explorer. So, yeah, I don't know. It has to be a spur of the moment decision.
Yeah, it does. Octopus was my favorite going into the competition. So, yeah, so the quarterfinals saw Maltese Falcon playing Eclipse, and Eclipse won that handily. Ulysses was up against Azam. Azam got ahead of Ulysses, which meant Azam and Eclipse played off in the semis, and Eclipse won that by some considerable margin. It wasn't close. It was a pretty comfortable win for Eclipse, which took her into the final. On the other side of the draw, Pelorus beat Sailing Yacht A in the quarters, so she went into the semis. And Octopus was playing Black Pearl, and Octopus won that, which meant Pelorus and Octopus, like you said, played off in the semis. On the other side of the draw, and Octopus again won that pretty comfortably. So we had a big Eclipse Octopus final. And Cecile, who won the final?
Eclipse.
It was Eclipse indeed. And it was, again, you know, it wasn't close. Eclipse won very, very comfortably. So like a 3-1, I suppose, in football terms, margin of victory. It was a good run from Octopus. But Eclipse, people love that boat. I can't get around it.
It's funny, Alan, looking on social media, people definitely have their candidates as champions, you know. I wasn't quite sure who was going to win overall. Octopus had quite a few comments, positive comments, and, you know, obviously you know why. And anyway, very interesting. That was fun, though. How many people voted in the end?
We had over 40,000 votes. So obviously, I think by the end of the competition, it'll be closer to 50,000, which is brilliant, you know.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Very, very, very happy with that. So massive congratulations to Eclipse, the inaugural champion of the World Cup of Super Yachts, a very worthy winner. Like Cecile said, just great to see so many of you engaging with this competition. Eclipse, fair enough. You can't argue with that result, but Octopus was I was backing her all the way, but it wasn't to be. Anyway, let's talk design and innovation awards. So usually we'd be handing out these awards at the Super Yacht Design Festival in Cortina in Italy, but obviously not this year. The festival has been pushed right back in the year to December 2021 and will be held in Milan. But we couldn't keep people in suspense for that long, and we had to release the results of the competition, which was judged late last year. And so they're all on the website now, the winners, but we thought it'd be fun to talk through them. Cecile, let's kick it off.
Yeah, well, it was definitely an interesting year for BDA, as we call it. To let people know how it happened, we, instead of meeting in person in London, as we usually do, the judges and us just met over the internet, as we do now, right? Over 2 days. And it was really interesting because we had judges at the time in the East Coast of the US. We had people in the UK. We had people in Europe. And we had a judge in Fremantle, Australia, which meant we had to find a time that worked with 12 hours difference. So that was interesting. But it went very well. And we decided the winners. We had 142 nominations in 13 categories, 30 of them alone in exterior design. So there was quite a bit to talk about. So quite a good year for BDA, considering what was going on in the world at that time. So in addition to Artifact, which obviously we already discussed, and Artifact, by the way, won Naval Architecture as well as Interior Design and Innovation for the application, first application on a superyacht of this ABB direct current grid.
So she walked away with three Neptunes.
Exactly. Wow. Yes, not bad. Not a clean sweep, mind you, but...
Not bad.
So in addition to Artifact, the sailing yacht Geist also did quite well, taking two awards. She won for Best Sailing Yacht Interior, and she won the Eco Award. And you might say, well, yeah, sailing yacht, Eco Award, that makes sense, right? But it was just the whole concept impressed the judges. It goes way beyond just being a sailing yacht. She was just thought through and through to be eco-friendly. She's got, well, of course, she's made of wood, which is a renewable material. Her sails are recyclable. She's got a shaft generator that recharges batteries. But that's not all. The builders and the owner thought about the day when they will have to retire Geist. And so even the end of life stuff was taken into account. So, for example, the mattresses are biodegradable because, you know, by the time you get rid of them, they'll have to go away. And little details like even the sacrificial anodes are in aluminium instead of zinc because aluminium does not contain cadmium.
Do you have to force yourself to say aluminium instead of aluminum?
A little bit, yes. I was looking at the word actually just now with an I, like aluminium, yes.
Well, Artifact, very worthy winner of those three awards, obviously. And Geist is a hell of a boat, really. So, I mean, I've never seen anything like this boat, built by Spirit in the UK. I think the yards in Ipswich, they just do a great job. And you might be familiar with Spirit if you're a fan of the Bond movies, because James Bond is often seen sailing a Spirit yacht about. I think he sailed one into Venice in one of the recent movies. I can't remember which one it was.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Cool. Yeah, I'll have to go check it out.
he's a big fan of the Spirit Yachts, is Mr. Bond. But I urge anyone not familiar with this boat to go to our website right now and have a look at her, because her interior is just incredible. It almost shouldn't have happened. It's kind of like, you see, you know, how is it possible that this has been done? It's almost that level of uniqueness, I suppose. It's incredible. Incredible.
It's true. I'd never seen anything like it either. The judges love the organic shapes of this Rhodes Young interior and the way the design plays on contrast of color and light. It's very unique. Absolutely gorgeous.
There's not a straight edge on that entire boat.
No, really beautiful. Anyway, so she won two awards. So that's pretty really well. Now, Explore Yachts did well too. The full custom Blue 2, designed by Andrew Hook and built at Turquoise Yachts, won the outstanding exterior design in the 40 to 59 meter motor yacht category. The judges really like that there is a very modern Explorer under all that classic beauty, and they just loved her charm.
Blue 2 is just impossible not to love. Everyone who sees her just immediately falls for her kind of old school styling and that long, low aft deck. She's just such a happy looking ship. Yeah, adore Blue 2, and beautifully executed by Turquoise. And it's great to see her recognized by the judges.
Perfect proportions. Yeah, you might think, you know, Innovation Awards, why are you going for such a classic look? But it's so well done. And I mean, really, it's a very modern Explorer underneath all that classic lines. So yeah, very beautiful boat.
And I should add another plug for the website. So there's a full feature about Blue 2 on the website with lots and lots of photos. So go have a look at that.
Very good article, yeah. Then the Yacht Explorer La Dacia, which was designed by Azure Naval Architect, received the judge's special commendation for exterior design among yachts longer than 60 meters. There was a tough competition in the biggest motor yacht category. In the end, the Benetti Lana got the edge, and what won the judges over is that she looks very sleek for her length, 107 meters.
Again, La Dacia, another special boat. Currently in the far reaches of Eastern Russia, I think. And Lana, that's interesting. Okay, so one of the big Benetti Gigi yachts picking up a gong for exterior design. And it's worth saying, actually. So this is, I mean, these results aren't, you know, the debate isn't formulaic or predictable at all. So I, like Cecile, so I sit, although I don't vote, and I just kind of pay attention. I sit in the room with the World Superyacht Awards judging, and you kind of think, some of the decisions are easy, but none of the decisions are easy. And it's exactly the same with the BDA. So there's a considerable debate about each one because there's some very strong characters in that room and with vast experience who have their say. So yeah, each boat has been scrutinized to the nth degree. So they are really worthy winners.
Yeah, it's always very interesting to hear what people have to say. So at the opposite end of the field, the San Lorenzo SX112, which is the first of a new series designed by Zhukan International, won Outstanding Exterior Design. So it's in the motor yacht category 24 to 39.9 meters. The judges said the innovative design and layout just create a whole new boating lifestyle. I think I agree. It's very different.
It is so different. And yeah, congrats to Zhukan for conceiving it, really. And San Lorenzo for having the, you know, fortitude to build it. The first one, it should be noted, was bought by the boss of San Lorenzo.
That's right.
Massimo Perotti. So, you know, the proof is in the pudding. But he loves it. He loves it. And it's a really special boat. And just San Lorenzo are on a real roll at the moment and really introducing some new thinking into layout and design. And the Lissoni element on the interiors as well makes it a really, really beautiful boat. So, yeah. Another worthy winner.
Definitely nice. Very great boat. I saw it in Palm Beach. It was there, which was amazing. Everybody stopped along the way, you know, to just look at it. The best lifestyle feature is a very popular category that we have. And we had a lot of entries this year, not surprisingly, for beach clubs. I mean, everybody wants a beach club, right? But the winner was a wellness area on Benetti's Luminosity. And you might say, well, at 107 meters, it's got some room to play with it, for sure. But it's a very well-considered space and very well-designed. It has a big plunge pool, juice bar, yoga space, sauna, hammam, dive store, great opening terraces, windows all around. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's so vast, that space. It could be some kind of upmarket metropolitan gym, you know, that you pay way too much money to be a member of. It is a hell of a space. Just open and bright and yeah, very well conceived.
I didn't get onto Luminosity, but I'd be very curious. I would love to see that in person. It must be an amazing, amazing space. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I'm hoping she'll be at the autumn shows, so I think there'll be some opportunity to have a little wander about.
So let's go back to sailboats for a moment. The 33.7 meter Solaris Sophia won for outstanding exterior design in that sailing yacht category. I think the judge's just favorite feature was a big owner's cabin at the aft, which has a glass bulkhead overlooking a private cockpit. And they just loved overall the slickness of the design by Monaco Yacht Temptation.
So, yeah, this is a really unusually laid out boat because it's 33.7 meters, which is a popular size for these kind of cruiser racer type sailing boats. But it positions the master cabin right aft. And so when you wake up in the morning, you kind of walk up a few steps and open these big doors. And the bathing platform is basically your private sea terrace. Yeah, really interesting, novel solution to where to place a master cabin on a 33-meter sailing boat.
Yeah, it makes it very attractive. I think I did actually speak with the owner of that boat. And I mean, that was basically part of the idea for the design is to make it so the space is more comparable to maybe a motor yacht. You know, it's a very nice, very full beam, beautiful cabin. So, yeah.
Well, that's what our various debates about, you know, why isn't the sailing yacht market doing as well as the motor yacht market? A lot of people say, well, it's its comfort levels, simple as that, you know, volume for spaces like master cabin just aren't comparable on a sailing yacht. But this, I guess this is one answer to that problem. You know, they've put the master cabin in the beamiest part of the boat and it gets the lion's share of that volume. And with the result, the judges awarded it. And yeah, it's just a good solution to that problem.
I agree. Definitely. Now, as you know, we have a tendency in the yachting world, the builders are trying to stay within a certain envelope to simplify things. And in a moderate size motor yacht, everybody's trying to stay below 500 gross tons, which is great. But you know, you have to be clever and innovative to build a nice yacht in that envelope. And that's exactly why the judges went for the Baglietto Club N as a best interior design for motor yacht under 500 gross ton. They loved what the yard and Achille Salvani did on the interior, the way it interacts with the windows and the space, And basically, he created a whole world around the owners of a completely custom yacht, beautiful shapes, amazing materials. And anyway, that was a very well awarded winner, I think. Beautiful boat.
Yeah, I'm so happy for Baleato as well, because that you get this impression from the yard. They really poured every ounce of effort and energy into this build. And they don't do a lot of custom projects, but it's so nice to see this really special one picking up a Neptune. I think a really worthy winner.
Yeah, very difficult to do, I think, with the material and, you know, speaking with the designer, definitely not an easy boat to build, but they did a great job. And then, as you know, a few years ago, we introduced the Best New Series category to recognize the work that goes on in the summer custom world. And it's amazing how much work is going on there and how beautiful the results are. The winner this year is a 27-meter, or 88 feet, Riva Folgore. The judges really like that. It is a classic Riva with a modern twist, and they just love the harmonious design inside and out. And I think there was not a whole lot of debate in that category.
They don't get a lot wrong, Riva, do they, really? I mean, the Folgore is just cool. It's just a really cool-looking boat. So, yeah, fair enough.
I don't know how many they sold, but they probably will sell a few.
Oh, huge. They'll sell a ton of them, no doubt.
And then we had the tender of the year. That went to a 12-passenger custom limo designed and built by Yachtworth Meyer as a new tender to Superyacht Radiant. And I think what did it is the luxury. This is an amazing, amazing custom tender with hand-stitched leather and all that. And it goes 45 knots.
Handy speed, get you to the restaurant and back quickly. I mean, the custom tender market's just it's gone wild in the last kind of decade, hasn't it? I mean, it's so different now. I mean, the quality and the fit out of these limos is just something to behold. I mean, the price per square meter is probably comparable with the mothership. I mean, it is just, they are spectacular.
You know, we probably should do an article on that. I'd be curious myself to find out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, one of the things that we do different at Boat Design Innovation Awards, we do have a naval architecture category, as you know, and you know, this is a difficult category for judges to judge. So to assist with that, we have a special architectural committee. They look at the curves and the numbers and all of that. So anyway, they help decide those winners. So in addition to Artifact, which we already mentioned, won for the Superyacht full displacement, they awarded prizes to Seagull 2, and Touch Me. So Seagull 2, as you know, is 81 meter built by Royal Husband, designed with Dijkstra Naval Architecture. And it won over the 30.5 meter Southern Wind Morgana, which is kind of interesting because actually they were only a few points apart, but the nod went to Seagull 2 because she breaks new ground in design and engineering of large contemporary schooners.
So, they really do. The maths involved in the processing of these awards, it gives me a headache just thinking about it. But there's some very, very smart naval architects on the jury, and they really look at every single, they really crunch the numbers, basically, to figure out which naval architecture is the best on all these super yachts. And like you said, so Artifacts Naval Architecture won on the motor yacht side, and Sea Eagle, that's good. So the massive Hausmann boat picked up on the sailing outside, but Morgana was a close second.
Yes, that was interesting. But I think, yeah, in the end, it's just that the you know, the innovation to make it happen for such a big sailing yacht was what gave Seagull the edge. And then the last naval architecture prize went to the 43 meter Pershing Touch Me. It's not the first hull in her series, but the boat had demanding new speed requirements. She goes 38 knots. So she has more power, and there were hull refinement made to gain the last fraction of speed.
So, okay, so on the motor yacht side, Artifact and the Pershing Touch Me picked up the two prizes.
Right.
Okay.
So, yeah, semi-displacement category for the Pershing, obviously, and full displacement for Artifact.
Gotcha, yeah.
So anyway, we have a longer discussion and all kinds of photos of all the winners online if you'd like to go check it out, which I would encourage you to do. That's about it for the BDA this year, but we actually are looking for nomination for 2022. So if you'd like to go check it out, it's online and see what the requirements are for entry.
And please do seriously consider that, because unlike the World Superyacht Awards, so the difference, I suppose, that's a good opportunity to talk about the difference.
Yeah, I suppose that's a question that does come up. What's the difference?
Well, so the World Superyacht Awards are judged by superyacht owners, and they look at a superyacht as a whole. Did it deliver what the owner wanted, and does it stack up as a holistic unit effectively? Whereas the Design and Innovation Awards look at very specific pieces of design or engineering on boats. So the World Superyacht Awards judges wouldn't consider naval architecture, for instance. However, the Design and Innovation Awards judges do. Specific awards for exterior styling, interior styling, etc. So I suppose the Design and Innovation Awards gets a bit more granular about specific parts of boats, whereas the World Superyacht Awards judges look at, you know, just as they take a broader view of the entire ship and kind of an award on that basis.
Yeah, we love to pour over GAs at the BTA. Very interesting. I've learned to read the GAs much better over the years.
Well, I mean, you say that. It is fascinating. It is a genuine learning experience being in the room with so many experts, because they see things you don't see.
Absolutely, And we have experts in lighting, we have experts in furniture design, we have experts in automotive design. So it brings a whole different types of looks on the same project, which is very interesting.
That's absolutely true. So it's not just yachting professionals or yacht designers, although there are some of those in the jury. It's, like you said, lighting experts and car designers as well, very well-known car designers. So yeah, it's a real mixed bag of very, very professional and expert people. Thank you, Cecile. So just to reiterate, so if you want to see an explanation, a written explanation of why the judges chose their winners, that's available on the website now, as well as the rather slick video about the awards. And we forgot to mention one very special award, Lifetime Achievement.
I will leave it up to you to do that. Who is the Lifetime Achievement Award winner this year, Stuart?
So this year's very worthy recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award was none other than Tim Hayward. So an absolute legend in superyachting circles. It was great that he picked up the gong this year. I mean, he's been involved in something like almost 100 superyachts. I think it's about 95 or something. And just some of the boats on his CV. I mean, I don't think any designer will probably ever come close to that level of output ever again. And, you know, Polaris we mentioned earlier, obviously, and the vast success of the Amels Limited Edition series. So, you know, massive congratulations to Tim. And he'll get a very special moment on stage at the Design Festival in December, where we will get to celebrate his extraordinary achievements in person, which will be great fun.
I'm looking forward to that. He's such a charming person as well, and funny and interesting. So yeah, definitely congratulations to Tim Hayward for this very well-deserved award.
Absolutely. I always think Tim's absolutely deserved the right to be, high and mighty, but he's absolutely not. He's the most grounded guy you can meet. Always ready with a smile. Just a delightful, charming gentleman. Alrighty, thank you, Cecile. We're going to skip over news and data this week because we thought we'd dedicate the entire podcast to the BDA and, of course, the World Cup of Superyachts. Congratulations once again to Eclipse. So if you stay tuned, you can hear Cecile's interview with Aaron Clark, the captain of 80 Meter Artifacts, which picked up 3 awards at this year's Design and Innovation Awards.
Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
How are you? Are you on the boat today?
I am on the boat today. I just finished a passage from Germany to Italy, and we're currently docked in Genoa.
Oh, wow. So we are using the boat's satellite system?
Yes. Actually, we're on SIM card. We're just using cellular.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you for joining us today and to talk about your career and the wonderful yacht that is Artifact. Let's start at the beginning. Can you tell us a little bit how you became a captain and your journey to this adventure on Artifact?
Yes. Okay. So I'm from New Zealand, and at an early stage, when I left school, I worked for my father. He is a commercial fisherman, so I started very, very early. And by the time I was 18, I did my first captain's license, which gave me a certification to carry 450 people or persons on board, and an engineering certificate for up to 1,500 horsepower. So it was kind of very, very early start.
Wow, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Then I went to commercial vessels and drove high-speed ferries in New Zealand. And then I upgraded my certification to larger vessels and once again, more engineering certification, which has really helped me through the journey of, you know, through my seagoing life, and definitely has given me an advantage. And then I moved on to the super yacht sector in 1997 to my first new build. And so how I got into yachting was through that. So I've been 25 years. And I've been employed on three yachts and
three. Okay, that's not a whole lot.
On three yachts, yeah, that's not a lot. And you know, I didn't take any time off in between. You know, I've been full time for that whole 25 years and three yachts. But it's been quite easy to keep myself busy in that time period because out of the three yachts, I was the owner's representative for the builds and the captain as well.
Oh wow!
Yeah, yeah. So the interesting thing about that is that out of the three yachts I've built, all three owners have been first-time yacht owners, and out of the three owners, two have been engineers, as is the owner of Artifact. So,
oh, how interesting!
Yeah, I kind of find it interesting because you know it's really physical responsibility. So you work on the design, the build, the operational components of the vessel, and you actually get to see how it really works over a long period. Yeah.
Oh, very interesting. So how did you get involved with Artifact, and how soon were you involved in the project?
Okay, so I got involved before it actually is what Artifact resembles today. And it started off as a process very similar to the first two vessels I built. And it was about, you know, mostly about change and enhancing of an owner's lifestyle at a certain stage. You know, people want to change their lifestyle, and yachting is a great way to do that. And so the owner of Artifact and I, we did a lot of research to assist with the development of what he was looking for in a super yacht. We went to everything from semi displacement high speed monohulls to swath catamarans.
Wow!
for this, you know, just for stability, we started off at 500 GT when we started looking at boats, and we went to 1200, 2200, and then we went to 2,999 gross ton for Artifact. So yeah, that's kind of how we got to this.
So obviously this boat is really very much shaped around the needs of this family. And so can you tell us a little bit of what their primary goals were when building Artifact?
Yeah, so the vessel of Artifact, as I mentioned earlier, he's an engineer. So you know he's very visionary, and he's very clear and concise about what he likes and what he wanted. And you know, the what he wanted out of a yacht is he really wanted to enhance the available technology that we have to us at the moment. And he didn't want a traditionally styled motor yacht. He wanted something that was maybe a little bit more cutting edge, which Artifact definitely is. And some of the primary goals for the owner was definitely guest comfort. His wife is a little sensitive to movement. So, you know, roll period, stability, acceleration points through the vessel, that was really important. Another thing that was really important to him is a lot of glass, lots of glass. You know, he has a house with a lot of glass. Like a lot of people now, you know, they build properties and they have their luxury homes, they've got a lot of glass. They're bringing that same concept onto yachts, and we're seeing that more and more. Comfort was very important as well. Noise levels, you know, had to be very low. You know, in some places, in his office at anchor, we were down at 28, 29 dB. In his bedroom, underway at 15 knots, we're at, you know, 35, 36 dB. So very quiet. Another thing that was really important was diesel electric. He really wanted to do diesel electric. And not only diesel electric, he wanted to do a DC bus. So that was kind of interesting. Pods, well, he really wanted pods as well. I found that very interesting for a yacht. And that minimized a lot of vibration and any structural borne noise we may get out of the vessel. And another thing he really wanted to do was a DP system. dynamic positioning system. That was kind of forward thinking at that point, because there's a lot of places that are very sensitive, so we wanted to incorporate that. And another thing that was important to him is he really wanted to reduce the impact any vessel he built would have above the waterline and below the water surface. So yeah, so that's
really interesting. But that's a very complicated brief. So and you started from a blank sheet of paper, as we say. So can you tell us a bit about the steps that led to the construction of the yacht? I mean, how did you move along? I understand that you did a lot of research and development at the very onset of the project. Can you tell us a little bit about how that worked?
Yeah, okay. So one of the advantages from this was starting from a clean slate. You know, that really, that doesn't give you any boundaries. You have a really large spectrum to work with. So, you know, once we we'd gone through and done a lot of research and saw what appealed to us, you know, we went with the displacement hull, mono hull, that fit all the parameters that we were looking for. And then the next task was to obtain a suitable designer for the project. And when you do that, you know, it's kind of an interesting process. You know, it's very interesting. But we needed to find an innovative design office, you know, that would incorporate some of the, you know, well, not only our primary goals or the owner's primary goals, but bring their ideas as well to enhance that. So we chose Greg Marshall design for that. And then the next is you move into interior, and the interior company had to incorporate the exterior design of the vessel, which is very, very cutting edge with all the windows, design an interior that complemented the exterior as well. And Raymond Langton Design from London was selected for that. So that was a really good cooperation between the two. And I suppose from there, you know, we... once we started moving forward, you know, we went through a lot of technologies. We went through a lot of what was available. You know, we looked at, you know, we knew we were going to go diesel electric, so we looked at micro turbines. We looked at an AC bus, a DC bus, all the pod options. You know, there's a few pod options there, but we felt the option that we had was the best for the application. Glass technology. You know, when we started doing that, you know, I remember people just looked at us a little sideways and went, wow, that's, you know, that's a lot more than anyone's been talking to them about. So, you know, we had a lot of stipulations with glass, you know, no storm shutters, no, you know, we had a lot of...
No storm shutters, wow, yeah.
No storm shutters, no. And there was a few things that, you know, we've got a lot of glass. So, you know, the people were kind of looking at us a little sideways with that, but there were companies that were... that we're moving forward with it. And so, yeah, so, and the other thing was, you know, just other materials. What could we build the boat from? How could we incorporate for more advantages in the future? And just really a lot of proven technology that was reliable and maintainable. You know, that was really important. It's easy to get caught up with some new things, but, you know, we really want reliability and something that's proven. So so we kind of went through that. Well, I did a lot through that too with the owner, and we did some tank testing concepts as well. We did one of that right in the beginning, and you know, I met with a lot of...
Before you selected a yard?
Oh yeah, before we selected a yard, yeah. So we did a fair bit of research ourselves. So that was kind of how we get to a concept, I suppose you'd say. But you know, there's a lot of meetings with people about, you know, just so many different factors with the boat. But we spent 1.5 years developing that to get a solid brief before we approached any yards.
And what did you do? Did you go to shows? How did you do your research?
You know, we went to commercial shows too. You know, we did the diesel electric hybrid show in Amsterdam. That was in 2013. I went to some commercial shows as well, because yachts are getting bigger and bigger, and a lot of the equipment from the commercial vessels are very suitable, especially when it comes to maintainability, all those aspects. But you know, commercial sector has a lot of physical responsibility with the cost as well, you know, and ongoing relationships. And you know, they don't want vibration, they want good quality, they want quiet equipment, you know, they want all the same things we do.
So in a sense, if I understand correctly, your process, by the time you got to the point where you were going to select a builder, you had a very, very solid brief. That did it look very much like what Artifact is today?
Yes, it was a 75 meter, and it was 2300 GT. And we grew from there again, So that was an interesting part as well. But yeah, so we had a pretty good brief. We were very solid, and we had an idea of the pedigree that we wanted the boat to be. That was really important to understand what the pedigree and the product of the boat and what its end task would be.
Yeah, very good. So then from there you went to tender with shipyards, and then you ended up selecting Nobiskrug. And I understand that actually you did a lot of different testing. And yes, of course, the tank testing. I mean, it's very rare that people don't do these, but other interesting stuff that had to do with the superstructure as well.
You know, we did two comprehensive tank testings. One was at Marin, and the second one was at HSVA in Hamburg. The first one at Marin, that was done at an early stage when the vessel was at 75 meters, and we were coming up with our own concept, and that was before we went to any yards, anything. We just did it ourselves, and we wanted to kind of start getting our head around what we were after, what we wanted. You know, that took 3 days, and it was great. You know, we had ABB. At this stage, we'd already kind of knew that we were using ABB. They made miniature pods for us to do self-propelled tests. That was really, really handy. So we knew we had...
So ABB, just for people listening, are the people who supply the propulsion and the diesel electric system with the
That's
diesel
correct,
bus.
Yes. And that was really good. And Quantum stabilizers. They had two engineers there. We did some development beforehand, and we sampled or tested Magnus rotor stabilization, just quantum fins, everything. And we found that, you know, for the operational parameter and what we required, the quantum XT fins were perfect for it. So we really started eliminating some factors before we even went to the shipyard. So we really had control of what we were doing, and we kind of could put a really good brief out to people. So, yeah, so then we did a second tank test once we went to contract. And with Nobiskrug, once we went to the second contract, we already had a lot of information, but we improved some of the hull form for better flow through to the pods to make them a little more efficient. Another thing too that we had to do is we had to pay attention to the differential in between pods and conventional drives. Pods have got a lot of torque, and when you start turning them, they really can start pushing the boat around. So directional stability was very important, not just for the vessel, but for efficiency and for guest comfort. So we worked a lot on that. We got another 9% of our more efficiency out of our long range running, so our ocean passage or passage making. You know, if you're running for 15, 20 days, that makes quite a difference. And another interesting point that I don't think a lot of people do on yachts is on motor yachts is wind tunnel testing. And you know, we found that, you know, we didn't want any ventilation coming out anywhere that would disturb anybody. The exhausts, we found, because we were going to be a DP vessel, we didn't just wind tunnel straight into the wind. We actually shifted the boat around quite a number of angles. And we found that we had to lift the exhausts 600 millimeters, which is nothing when you do it before you find you've got a problem. So, you know, it really paid for itself. And I think that the advantage, I can really see the advantage with the vessel. You know, we don't have any smells. We don't have any issues like that, any exhaust issues. And another interesting one is we did CFD testing for the propellers to see what frequency they would run at. But at HSV, we did a tank pressure test with that too to ensure that the frequency wouldn't coincide with the structural frequency of the vessel, so we didn't have any structural borne noise. So, you know, we really eliminated as many factors as possible. But you know, that second test was really, really beneficial, and we have the benefits of that today.
Yeah, I guess it's especially important since the yacht has so much glass. Actually, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about the superstructure in itself. I mean, the hull is steel. But superstructure, not everybody might realize, is actually a composite with a lot of glass. So it's a different type of structure. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes. So the interesting part about it is that the facade of the vessel is GRP. And it's not just, you know, just laid GRP. It's foam core sandwiched GRP. So it's very strong. And the core of the vessel, so the hull steel, and the core of the vessel through the superstructure is steel. But you don't see, you see probably only 5% of the superstructure that's steel on the boat. The rest of it's just all GRP. So there were a number of reasons for it. You know, Firstly, you know, we needed to get a lot of shapes that were important, and it's very hard to get that out of just out of alloy and have to fare it. We needed to be a little lighter through the vessel because we were carrying a lot of weight with glass. The other advantages were that, you know, it had no corrosion, you know, and but I think some of the aspects, no corrosion is a really great one for us. You know, we're anything with alloy vents, all of our ventilation or vents outside, our locker doors, they're all GRP. So, you know, one of the advantages we get out of that as well is with the GRP, it's very well molded. So we get these beautiful shapes that are like natural, more of a natural evolution look to the vessel. And the great thing about that is that it's very thin on, you know, we don't use very much fairing compound for it. We're probably 70% less on fairing compound, so it comes out really really quite special. But so that's the GRP, and then coupled with that, because it kind of goes hand in hand with the glass a little, because the one causes the other to happen. So we got the benefits out of the GRP, but the glass, as you know, most people have seen in the photographs, everything that you see on the boat that's black is glass. It's not painted to match to be glass. It's actually glass. So even if it's over any steelwork, it's glass, and it's about 24 millimeters thick when it goes across that. So the glass itself, that was, I suppose you'd say, quite challenging. So we found with the glass, you know, to minimize the amount of pillars and the size of the pillars, we had, there was another benefit going with a steel superstructure, like the core of the vessel, so we could actually have larger windows and more strength. So yeah, the glass really, I would say it was a challenge, but it wasn't impossible. It wasn't one of those challenges that were overcome with. We dealt with a company, GL Jotverglasen in Germany, and they were really instrumental in the design work and putting it together. And after 1 year doing 13,000 nautical miles, and, you know, really, we've been out in the ocean, and we've done a couple of Atlantic crossings, and we've been in some pretty large waves, I think up to about 7 meters maximum. It's strong. There's no issue with the glass. And there's a few misconceptions with the glass. A lot of people look at the glass and go, wow, that must take a lot of work. But it doesn't. We have Tech Water on board.
What is Tech Water?
Okay, sorry. Tech Water is just a higher quality, less impurities in it. So it's actually at a better level than what you get for bottled water. So when you hose, it doesn't leave any residue on. So once we've got the windows clean, we have a nano coat on it, we estimate 1 to 2 deckhands less for just because the amount of glass. It actually goes, once you've operated the boat, you realize how much easier it is. But as for the glass, we carry, we have 750 square meters, and the largest piece is about 18 square meters, and have a total of about 50 ton.
Wow.
Yeah, we have some of it, one piece alone is like 1.9 ton, but we have a total of 223 pieces of glass on board the boat. So it's really quite a little puzzle going in there. And the longest piece is about 10.5 meters long. So, you know, it was an interesting thing. Glass is definitely something we're going to see on boats a lot more.
Does that change your perception as a captain?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. You know, I see more wildlife when I'm driving the boat. The guests get a better experience. They can see the horizon. If anyone's feeling a little unwell, they can see the horizon. You feel far more connected and have a better synergy with your surroundings as well, and the scenery, everything. I knew it would be good, but you don't know how good something is until you actually live it. And we're living it. And the owner is so happy to go in that direction with the glass. He's really happy with it. And you know, a lot of people would have seen the boat. It looks really quite stunning in images and magazines, but you know, the true appreciation of the vessel is when you see it in person. It has a lot of really complex shapes, and it's quite an architectural masterpiece, really. It's quite spectacular.
You were away for quite some time, so people didn't get to see it. So this, now that you're around a marina closer to a city center, do you get any reactions from people looking at the boat?
Oh, yes. Yep. I'm learning a lot more about Italians and how they love things. They really like the glass. I've had people come up to me and comment, you know, how they think the boat is a piece of art, you know, and I really think the word, the name Artifact is so fitting to the boat. It's true to its name.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, these are the things that we can see, So let's talk a little bit about what we can't see, but that does change the perception of the boat on the water. And I wanted to go back to a little bit to the diesel electric propulsion system and that DC bus, which you might have to explain a little bit because I'm not sure everybody understands what that is and what are the benefits for the boat. And
okay, so the DC bus, so we're diesel electric. And we have variable speed engines, so we're not a fixed RPM for our engines. And they're coupled to just AC generators, and they go through a rectifier into a DC bus. And we have connected to that DC bus, we have four engines connected to that DC bus. And out of the four engines, any one of them can come online quite rapidly. And there's no synchronization. So it comes on pretty instantly. And another thing we have connected to the DC bus is a battery pack, and that's around about 610 kilowatts. So we, you know, I've been on the boat for a year. I've never seen the lights dim. I've never seen the blackouts. I've never seen any brownouts, nothing. It's a really stable system. And then from there, from the DC bus, that's running around about 1,000, that's actually 1,000 volt. And then from there, we run into island converters, or inverters, sorry, that are big island inverters that are water-cooled. And then we have three of those, one to each drive. And then we have off of that as well, a house inverter, which we then take off 110 or 220. So it's not a really, you know, it's a system that they use for better efficiency on commercial vessels. But the application for what we found was really good because we have a lot of variable profiles with a yacht. You know, sometimes we're going faster, slower. You know, we really find the benefits of that.
Oh, yeah. Is it the first time this has been done on a private yacht, I believe, right?
This is, yes, that's correct. This is the first DC bus propulsion system in yachting. So yeah, it's really quite neat.
So on the operational side, what are the advantages for you? I think you and I discussed this before, that you did a crossing using just one engine, for example.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we can adjust any power need that we require. And we only burn the energy that we require for that need. But we do a lot of passage making just with one engine. You know, and that saves you, you know, if you do an ocean passage, you could be 900 engine hours for three engines, because normally boats will run three engines, two propulsion and one house generator. But we'll run one, so we're only, you know, running a third of the hours. So that's what I call more efficiency as well. You know, you're going to burn a certain amount of fuel to do whatever you need, but the efficiency is in rebuilds of engines, everything. The batteries are just phenomenal. We can do 11 knots on batteries alone with no internal combustion engines.
Really?
Yeah.
For how long?
Not for that long, but but long enough, you know, long enough to really see the benefit for it. But truthfully, you know, we could run about an hour at about 6 or 7 knots. But we didn't design the boat for that. It's really just for peak shaving. So yeah, but really beneficial.
Great. And you don't have to really think for it. It just automatically adjusts, right?
Fully automated, and we've had it programmed. It's all been programmed, and we haven't touched it since we left the shipyard a year and a half ago.
And from talking with ABB, I understand that the DC grid, as they call it, you can actually evolve it with technology. So down the line, you may be able to swap out some of the elements.
That's correct. So the infrastructure is in the boat at the moment, so all the wire cabling, everything's in there. So if we want to change something out to, if fuel cells become available and suitable to refit in, we have that. We have solar power, we have solar panels on the top tier level. So yeah, we're very flexible. We really try to future-proof the boat, and it's important to future-proof these assets, as you know, in time things will change. It will become the norm. And if you're selling a second-hand vessel in 10, 15, 20 years, it will have an edge on the market because the client base is changing as we go. People are younger, people are more aware, and it's more appealing. So we have the, you know, just basically future-proofing the vessel. It's easy to do once you do it, if you do it from the beginning.
That makes sense. Now, you spent quite a few months on board and with the owners as well. Can you tell us about that experience, what it's been like?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously last year was an interesting year, especially to have a brand new boat.
Was was it?
Yeah, so it was an interesting year to have a new vessel. We found straight away the benefits of all of our R&D planning. Everything was beneficial immediately. You know, we basically lived on the boat straight away. And we ended up going to the Caribbean in the hurricane season. It was really, really, it was good. You know, it was a great season. It was actually much nicer than being there in the winter. The owner spent 7 months on board, pretty much continuously. And we found that everything in the boat, the refrigeration, the size of everything, the stores, the fuel, everything complemented that situation to actually... We didn't think we'd build a boat that we had to run away and use as an ark straight away, but it happened, you know, and it worked, you know, and it worked. And one of the, yeah, so that was really good.
Is there anything that surprised you, or have you learned anything more about the boat as you went?
Oh, yeah. No. I didn't realize how beneficial the DC bus was until I started operating the boat. The comfort level of the boat was just phenomenal. Something that really surprised me was how much we used DP and directional heading on the DP system. You know, we used over 650 hours in the first year. And that shows the ability of how the boat is really adapts to the situation that you want to be in. And you're kind of only limited by your imagination of how you do it. But I think that the listeners and all the crew would kind of get this, is the biggest surprise I had was in a one-year period that we used the vessel, we only had one technician come on board for the warranty work, you know, and that was down to a few factors. You know, obviously quality of the vessel was phenomenal, but, you know, a good crew to operate the vessel and having a program that we could sustain our onboard maintenance on board. So yeah, there was a few surprises, but yeah, that was probably the most particular one that stuck out the most.
And in terms of efficiency, are you able to give us an estimate of what you think maybe this type of propulsion might save?
When we started into it, ABB, you know, said they were getting 20% to 30% from their commercial vessels. You know, our profile is a little different. It's very hard to say unless you sit side by side to somebody. But from my last vessel, I could probably compare it. The best way I could compare it was just an ocean passage, because that's just an ocean passage. It's just straight and away you go. Now, that vessel was 44 meters and about 450 GT. And I'd done 14 ocean passages with it across the Atlantic. So I had a lot of data from that. Artifact, the dollar value of the differential in between the two vessels going across the ocean was around $25,000 to $26,000. It wasn't very much at all. So there's your efficiency there. And the other efficiency is on that vessel, my last vessel, we ran three engines going across. And this vessel, we run one. So if you deduct that out of rebuild time, you know, you're not that much, there's not much delta in that.
Very interesting. Now, let's go back a little bit to the design. There was something that I was curious about when you and I were talking previously about the process of coming up with this very very custom interior. You mentioned that you had done a full mock-up to get the sense of the spaces on board. And I thought, oh, that's very interesting on a boat of this size. I mean, a lot of times now people just go like straight to 3D renderings. So I thought, well, maybe it's interesting for our listeners to find out how you did this and how it went.
We built probably around 80% of the vessel with the mock-up. And it was just out of 4x2 and building paper. We built the owner's level all in one piece, so you could walk through the boat. You could walk into the dining area, you could walk into the main salon, and the furniture was mocked up as well. So you could go in with 8-9 people and really get a true feel for what it was. We had the ceiling heights, we had the window sizes, we even had the bulwarks on the outside, just so we really got a grasp of the interior size of the vessel. Now, from that, we actually went to a much larger vessel underneath. So we did the reverse of a lot of people. We did how much space do we need? And then we went, how big does the boat need to be under it to fulfill our roll periods, acceleration periods, and efficiencies? So that was something very different we did. And we found it really beneficial. You know, we even just got a Sharpie and walked around and drew in where the light switches would be. But it was very beneficial. And you know, one of the things is that we looked into virtual reality for it as well. And it was about a third of the price to do the build that we did, the actual real. The real time, you know, and the real feeling. And so out of all of that, when we changed the vessel through and we developed the vessel from when we did the mock-up, we increased the owner's space inside the vessel by 13.6 square meters. So we were so close to it. We had the cupboard size, we had storage, we had everything that we knew. I even mocked up the galley, the bridge, the beach club, and you know, it's quite cost effective to do it that way. And it seems like a lot, but you know, we rented a 20,000 feet square warehouse. I think it was used for the film industry, and we did, you know, one piece, 60 meters in one piece. And you could walk through the whole entire living experience.
Yeah, Artifact has a very interesting layout, actually. And one thing that I'd like to ask you about is you were very involved as well in the layout and looking at it from the perspective of operations and of cruise services. And I think that's very interesting. The layout is quite different. You cannot access any of the decks from the outside, except for the main deck. All the circulation, for example, is in the interior. And the crew spaces are in different spaces that you are. There's a beautiful crew lounge, things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so, you know, it comes back to the primary goal of the owner's comfort. So what we did is we found all the high acceleration points through the vessel. We located all the owner's living areas in those places. And then we located all of the operational side and the higher acceleration positions on the boat. And we made sure we, you know, we put the tenders up towards the front. We have centralized all of crew operations. So, you know, everyone says they want to have less crew. So you have to design less footsteps into a vessel as well to have less crew. So we centralized all of the areas. So we have a crew mess on the main deck forward, full beam, where the owner's cabin would normally be in the hull forward, because that's a high acceleration point. But it's a great living area for everybody. Big windows, galley's not far from there, the waste treatment's there, and you're centralized through the whole vessel. So it makes a lot of sense. You know, it makes a lot of sense for the layout. And plus, you know, tenders. You've got to have the correct tenders on board, you know, and the correct sizes.
Oh, you have a nice tender on Artifact.
Yeah, it's a spectacular tender. You know, gyro stabilized. It's a really, really good. And, you know, we're an 80 meter boat, and we've got a 12 meter tender in a garage. We have four tenders. But the other thing that's very deceiving about the boat, it's 80 meters, but it's the largest volume 80 meter boat out there. You know, we compare up to 100 meter boats for the same volume. So, you know, it's kind of it's a little bit of a trick. It's a little bit like Doctor Who's TARDIS. You know, you look at it and go, how big could they? And you get in here, and it's a large boat inside.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. There are so many things fascinating about this boat. And certainly, we appreciate that you are able and willing to share some of this experience with us.
Yeah, no, it's a real pleasure to share this information, you know, and we really feel as though, you know, sharing what we're doing is beneficial to other people, you know, and moving forward, and it gives them more ideas and more potential to actually to keep excelling and progressing through what the industry is renowned for.
Well, thank you very much, Aaron. I know your time is precious, that you have lots to do to get ready for the upcoming months. And I hope to see you somewhere in Europe, maybe, around the Mediterranean.
I'm sure we'll see you sometime soon. And thank you very much for the opportunity to share the Artifact experience with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Do not forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.